From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Throughout this campaign season, we've welcomed candidates for significant federal, state, and local offices to the program. When we can, we bring candidates together for conversations and a debate of sorts, a discussion of the issues pertinent to their constituencies. This week, you probably saw that New York State Assemblyman Joe Errigo was charged with accepting a bribe in exchange for pushing legislation in Albany. Now, Joe Errigo is running for re-election, but he was soundly defeated in the Republican primary last month. He does remain on the ballot on the Independence and Reform Party lines. We invited him to the program today, but he declined to join us. We are glad to welcome the Republican and the Democrat on the ballot for the 133rd Assembly District. Marjorie Burns is the Republican, a longtime local attorney who worked as a prosecutor focusing on violent crime. She also worked as a city court judge for 10 years. Marjorie, welcome to the program. Thanks for being here.
Thank you very much.
And also with us is Barbara Baer, also a longtime local attorney, New York City as well. She's been a social worker. She served on the board of directors and is president of Children Awaiting Parents, and is now once again running as the Democrat in this race. Barbara, welcome back to the program.
I
want to just start with what we do know about Mr. Errigo, and there's a lot we don't know about the case against Joe Errigo, but given what we do know, Ms. Burns, I'll start with you. What do you think Assemblyman Errigo should do, given the charges of bribery against him?
Well, I absolutely do agree that anybody who is accused of a crime is presumed innocent. And I know Ms. Baer's been interviewed at other programs and I believe agrees with that, but obviously she can speak for herself in a moment, because that is important to anybody. And there's a standard in there of proof beyond a reasonable doubt. But in the court of public opinion, where people who are in public office are held to a different standard, because we are entrusted by our constituents. I do think the fact that, according to the complaint, that he admitted to wrongdoing and admitted that he took the money and admitted that he knew it was wrong, that I think with that information that he should resign.
Resign now as
yes.
a member of the Assembly?
Yes.
And declare no intention of keeping the job if he wins next month?
Yes, I do believe that would be accurate based upon his own admissions as they've been reported.
Okay. Barbara, what do you think?
I think that given that there is a presumption of innocence and also given the fact that he admitted a bribe, I think that he's in a position where he could really spill the beans on a lot of what is going on in Rochester. And I think that probably part of the reason he was arrested was to try to get him to talk about what's really going on. I actually think that he's part of the least of the problem. And he comes from, unfortunately, a long line of elected officials in the 133rd who have been indicted. And I think that whether he resigns now or he loses, which I believe he will, his constituent office will continue. And so the real issue is what is really going on in this district. The district has become infamous for all the wrong things. And frankly, the three electeds have served themselves and not the people of the district. That's really the problem. The district should be doing much better. The people in the district should be doing much better. But they've been offered a sort of potpourri of ideological and sort of narcissistic men who have really done nothing for the people. And I don't think the people have actually had an honest look at what the issues really are about.
Well, more than likely, there will not be a man in office. There will be a woman.
Good.
After the next election.
It appears to be.
Let me also say this here. You know, Ms. Burns, you won by, I think, 30 points or so last month. You won
yes.
handily.
Yes.
Almost a 2-1 margin over the incumbent, Joe Errigo, in the primary. So unlikely that he would win. But I would also say, and Barbara, let me ask you this. 2 years ago, you were running against Joe Errigo after Bill Noje died by suicide.
Mm-hmm.
Which
I was sorry about. That's not what I wanted to debate him desperately.
I know you did.
Because he was pretty smart. But I disagreed with him.
I knew him well. He was a very smart
yeah,
person.
Right.
No one is making any comment to be
right.
happy
okay.
with that outcome.
Okay.
But the fact is, he died by suicide before he was going to face up to his own corruption.
Correct.
And yet, that district chose to elect a recently deceased, pretty obviously corrupt Republican as opposed to hold their nose and vote for the Democrat.
Correct.
Which was you.
Right.
Do you...
Well, I'm sorry if people have to vote hold their nose when they vote for me, but...
No, I'm not talking about you.
I would ask people if they... even if you don't hold your nose, I hope you'll vote for me. but look, let's go back. A little history here. So, Assemblyman Nojay dies. I suspend my campaign out of respect. We go back into action. The primary hasn't happened. And so the Republican group, in their wisdom, has a choice. They could give Rick Milne, who's a mayor of Honeywell Falls and a very decent guy, they could have given him the nomination. But no, the party leaders didn't want to do that. So they continued in the primary, and they called. They had robocalls, and they said, vote for the dead man. So the folks voted for the dead man, and then the party got to choose. So they chose Joe Arrigo. Smart move. 10 years, he's got name recognition. He had 10 years of name recognition and did some good work, and people like him. So I got 43% of the vote despite that. I thought that was pretty good. So no one particularly congratulated me, and I felt awful. It's not fun to lose, but I thought I did a pretty good job in a set of difficult circumstances. And this time I was just thinking, well, I'm going to run again. I have name recognition. I certainly know the area better. And maybe we'll have a discussion of issues. However, that has not occurred, and I think it will occur. But this is a very serious issue. This is what happens when one party dominates a district forever. And honestly, what happens is that the people who are running don't really discuss the issues with the people. And the people need help. There's plenty of people who are working two jobs, who don't have health care insurance, who would want better educations. There's plenty of people in Pittsburgh who'd like to be much more involved, but they're kind of indivisible. So,
okay. Go ahead, Marjorie.
There's just something I want to say. That while certainly there were allegations against Mr. Nojay, which ultimately were not really brought out because of his unfortunate death, and now there are allegations against Mr. Arrigo,
That
doesn't mean that the Republican Party and that the people who live in this 133rd district elect and go out of their way to find politicians, and that every Republican in the Republican Party is wrong or bad for electing individuals. I've lived a lifetime in the public eye, both as an assistant district attorney when I was prosecuting violent felonies and homicides, as a Rochester City Court judge elected for 10 years, and even as law clerk to the Livingston County Court judge that I worked for, where every day of my life I saw and dealt with people, and everything I did, both publicly and privately, reflected on the people I worked for. And, I've lived a very exemplary life. And if I get elected to this spot, there is no issues of corruption. And, these issues with other assemblymen, whatever they are, can be put behind, and we start fresh and new on January 1st. With a new era for this district.
All right. And by the way, I want to make sure I'm clear with Barbara Bear.
Yeah.
I didn't mean the whole hold your nose thing. What I mean is if this district is willing to elect, as you say, the dead guy with a corruption record over any Democrat, not just you, it wasn't personal, then it's going to be a hard road for any Democrat.
Well, it is a hard road for any Democrat, but let me clarify a couple of things. First of all, in the late 1960s, I was a Rockefeller Republican and a Lindsay Republican, and it's only in the early 70s that I switched parties and stayed a Democrat for the rest of my life. Second of all, I think most of the Republicans in the district are honest, decent people who are working really hard, and I don't think they're well served by their electeds. That's number one. Number two, voting for the dead. Well, 3,000 people voted for Mr. Arrigo, and the chairs of the three counties, one of which counties, Marge, you and your group disposed of, they appointed Arrigo. They went to his house and asked him to join. And as to Mr. Nojay, You know, I don't know why the FBI dropped the investigation after he died. I mean, he had stolen millions of dollars, and I'm instructed by my friends that I should not say anything negative about Mr. Noje. I'm not saying anything negative. It's the truth. So that's not right. When I was in public life, and I'm sure it's true for you too, Borge, when I was in public life, I took no more than a cup of coffee, and maybe not even that, and I had plenty of power. That what he did was disgraceful, and then what the Republicans would not do was to put an honest Republican in.
Well, but let's move it forward here, because I'm hearing from both candidates here that you are pledging to voters you're not going to see a repeat of the corruption that this district has unfortunately seen.
Absolutely.
Or at least allegedly seen.
Absolutely.
From both of you.
Yes, absolutely.
Okay. And on the subject of what happened 2 years ago on this program, Barbara Bear was here, Joe Arrigo was here, ended up making statewide news because Joe Arrigo at the time said that President Barack Obama was urging black Americans to kill white Americans. He also told me, Mr. Arrigo told me, he wouldn't go back to his old Rochester neighborhood even in an armored car because it's so dangerous. I told him I visit that area with some frequency. I'd be happy to take him down there sometime. He urged me to get bulletproof windows. It was obviously racist statements, and yet the Republican Party did not call for Mr. Arrigo to leave that race or to give up his seat. Ms. Burns, should they have pressured him to step down after those comments?
Probably so, in retrospect.
Were those racist statements?
I would say they were.
Okay. And I suspect you don't share those views.
No.
But the reason I think it's relevant to return to those is, let me just read from the Washington Post. The American writer and self-described lifelong conservative Max Boot has experienced a radical change of heart about the Republican Party, and he just published a book called The Corrosion of Conservatism, Why I Left the Right. Part of that book was excerpted this week in the Washington Post, and I want to quote from it now. He writes, quote, "In 1964, the GOP ceased to be the party of Lincoln and became the party of Southern whites. As I now look back with the clarity of hindsight, I am convinced that coded racial appeals had at least as much, if not more, to do with the electoral success of the modern Republican Party on all levels than all of the domestic and foreign policy proposals crafted by well-intentioned analysts like me. This is what liberals have been telling me for decades. I never believed them. I do now." End quote. That's Max Boot talking about why he's leaving the Republican Party. Do you agree with any of that?
I haven't read the book. Obviously, you're just giving a quote.
Sure, yeah.
And certainly it would absolutely be something I'd have to read in context and analyze. But, yeah, as we sit here right now hearing it for the first time ever, you know, I'm not in a position
But broadly speaking, do you think that the Republican Party has furthered racial divides, and do you think it can heal racial divides in this country?
I don't think it has done anything to forward racial divides. And obviously there's always things that the party and every person who's a Republican, myself included, can do to heal them. You know, I was born and raised in the city of Rochester. I grew up, as I was telling Ms. Bear, only about 5 miles north of here on Lake Avenue, just off Lake Avenue, in the Shalott area. I lived my entire life until very recently in the city. I sold my house in about 16 years ago in the city of Rochester. I was three generations in the city, and my father owned a business in the city for 50 years that he just recently sold when he retired. And I've invested heavily both as a human being in my neighborhoods and in my communities. And I've had many friends who are African American. I still do. And had many phenomenal relationships with people when I was an assistant DA and as a judge. And so while I appreciate the quote that you gave, I don't see any issue in this race involving race. And as a matter of fact, myself, I can speak for, urban environments, this is where I grew up. This is where I thrived. This is where I went to school. This is the education I have. You know, these are the people who've been my friends and are my friends. And it's part of my life experience that I'm going to take to Albany.
Do you see racial divide in this country? And if so, what can we do about that? What do you think is causing that?
Oh, I think it's multifaceted by a lot of different people who are probably doing a lot to try to spur it for their own individual reasons. But as far as the 133rd District, I don't see it coming into play. I've walked up and down all of the streets of the city of Rochester when I've run for election. I've walked up and down the streets in the 19th Ward and in every other neighborhood, including the neighborhoods you're referring to.
Probably the one that Joe Riga grew up in.
Probably was. And it's just, I don't see it as any issue relevant to this race because it isn't. We have a very diverse group. This district goes from Pittsford all the way down to the city of Hornell, with a lot of villages and hamlets and small farms in between. And the diversity of this group, both ethnically and racially, monetarily, from people who are somewhat affluent in Pittsford to people who are very poor in southern Livingston County and in Steuben, and who've lost 2-4% of their populations and their jobs over the last few years. These are the issues we need to concentrate on and to pay attention to so that we can get everybody in this community up and running, working, and benefiting from our society.
Fair enough. And in the moment, we're going to go into healthcare, economy, and what are the two candidates here would do in Albany if they win next month. Do you want to respond to some of what you heard before we move on to those issues, Barbara?
Well, I agree that our district is economically diverse and not racially diverse. I disagree with the fact that racism wasn't an issue in the last 2016 election, and I do believe that Mr. Arrigo had talking points that would raise the issue of racism. And I was shocked when he talked about it in the way he did. And I don't believe that I'm not a Republican anymore, but it was really more for economic disparities rather than race at that point. But I don't believe that a lot of Republicans, by dint of being a Republican, are racist. And that's why once I answered Mr. Arrigo's comments, I said it a couple of times and let it go. I think he was looking to pick an argument on that issue, and that was not the issue of our times. Having said that, now, as an American and as a citizen and a person who's lived a full life, racism has become exacerbated in this set of years. And, of course, there was always an issue of racism. It's got to be healed. But there is now a belief that one can say anything to anybody at any time, and it's really unacceptable. Just like saying anything that is not true is acceptable. The facts are still the facts. And so I do think that it's worse now than it's been in a long time.
Okay.
No, but it doesn't affect this race, and it doesn't affect this district, and it doesn't reflect me, and it doesn't reflect my values, and it doesn't reflect how, if I'm elected, how I will be a representative for the 133rd district.
Let me tell you the websites if you want to learn more about the two candidates. Marjorie Burns is the Republican candidate. It's Burns for Assembly. Burns is BYRNES, the number 4, assembly.com. BurnsForAssembly.com. Barbara Bear is at BarbaraBear2018.com, and Bear is BAER. Now, Barbara, you said healthcare is a human right, yes?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. In a moment, I'm going to ask you what that means for policy in Albany. I'll start by asking your opponent, Ms. Burns, do you think healthcare is a human right?
I think healthcare is exceedingly important, and we should be striving to make sure that every person has healthcare. But I don't believe that we should be looking at a single payer program for that purpose. Right now, $78 billion is spent every year in taxes, or is collected every year in taxes. And even the most conservative estimates indicate that if we went to a single payer, tongue twister, system in this state, the taxes that need to be raised just to finance that would more than double. And that would make health care an incredible burden on our state's budget. Right now, 94% of the people who reside in our state have health insurance already. And another 4 or 5% have it available to them had they signed up, or if we can reach out to them to get them signed up, because they would be eligible for different programs, be it Medicare, Medicaid, Child Health Plus, or any of the other programs that are out there. But really, there's only 1.5% of our population, which is still a lot of people, don't get me wrong, who don't have health insurance or the ability to have it. And I don't see the necessity of more than doubling the taxes we need to collect in this state in order to accommodate 1 or 2%. I think what we should be doing is seeing what monies and what programs we can institute in order to take care of those people in the 1 or 2% in order to get them the health care they need.
All right, so it sounds like, Barbara, your opponent, and if I'm summarizing correctly, we don't have a perfect system, but we're doing pretty well. We don't have to throw out the entire system, greatly increase cost, when we can work within that system to maybe reach more people who are currently uninsured or have greater needs there. That's what I'm hearing from your opponent. Fair
absolutely.
Enough?
Absolutely.
Okay. All right. So Barbara, where do you disagree with what you just
said? Well, I think healthcare is right. So that's my first disagreement. And the second is that universal healthcare, which is basically like Medicare, would work. And third, yes, the RAND study and others show that on day one, the health bill in Albany would be very expensive. So that's why we shouldn't immediately just jump into that, nor should we just say yes or no. I always deplore these sort of are you for it or are you against it questions, which are actually volumes of information. My opponent is correct about the number of people who are not covered. And Medicaid, by the way, which is a government program, covers 1 in 4 people in the state. And it covers preconditions. So what I'm looking to shape is a program where it's right for everybody, where the insurance companies are out of it, and where the government actually allows people to have the health care we deserve. When we talk about it, we talk in sort of extrapolated points of view. But what we're talking about is somebody whose child is sick who doesn't have health care, and they need the health care, or somebody who has to work 2 jobs and their partner has the health care because they don't have it. It's real people in real time, and I think that everybody has a right to it. So I don't think that conceptually we can jump into that bill that's in Albany, and frankly, part of what will happen depends on how the Senate goes next year. But I do think that people have a right to health care.
And I'm trying to remember if it's, I think it's Dick Gottfried, but there's been a bill there for a long time.
Yeah.
So what you're saying, and I take the point, when you say for it or against it is too simplistic on complex
Correct.
Issues. Fair enough. But that bill, as you have seen it, you're not ready to go and vote
no.
for it.
Mm-mm.
Okay.
Okay.
Okay, fair enough.
Yes.
Any
yep,
other point of disagreement?
I was going to say, because Vermont, a number of years ago, tried to go with a single-payer plan. And it didn't work out. They ended up having to back off of it and move on to other issues.
Governor Peter Shumlin of Vermont was a Democrat, and this was 2014 into 2015, where they were getting pretty ready to roll out a single-payer plan. Now, that's a state that only has about 700,000 people. It's roughly the size of Monroe County. And the Democrats in Vermont said, we still can't afford this. We're not going to do this. Now, I understand there's been a lot of analysis since then, and I don't want to oversimplify, but the point, Barbara, your opponent is making is, if Vermont can't do that, and that's a small state, be sort of a small model, do we realistically have a way of getting to universal coverage in some form without breaking the bank?
Oh, I think we do, but I think that we have to look at the cost and we have to look at the insurance company. The insurance companies are making a huge amount of money, and part of why they're making money is they're denying people's claims. So I think we have to look at all of that and slowly change it. It doesn't have to be done on day one, but yes, we can afford it. We afford a huge amount of money for Medicaid. We afford a huge amount of money for education. We can do it, and we're a great state. We should do it.
Okay. You want to add to that?
No, I was just going to say that reforming health care coverage and modifying it and exploring ways to improve it is a lot different than going with a state plan that controls 100% of everything.
All right, that's what Medicare is. And I think, you know, people who are 65, which is me for sure, we're pretty happy to have Medicare. And a lot of people who are in their 60s are waiting to get on Medicare. And then there's a sigh of relief that they know that at least some of their needs are going to be taken care of. And that's what we need to do in this country.
Okay. That's where they are on healthcare. On the subject of the economy, I read it in an article in the Livingston County News where you were quoted as saying that you think Western New Yorkers sometimes, if I'm summarizing, kind of give a little short shrift to the success that we've had in some economic development in our area. That in some ways we just talk too monolithically as if the economy is awful and Albany is awful. But I didn't see specifically why you would be a little bit sort of defensive of the work that Albany has done. Am I summarizing correctly, and can you tell me more specifically, if you think the state has done a decent job on the economy in your district, where has that happened?
Well, first of all, I don't think my district has gotten a cut of the state's grants and other, you know, ways of help. I don't think we've gotten much help because we had assemblymen in Albany, some of whom don't even show up on the floor, but they're certainly not incredible advocates for the district. And now I see what you mean about economic development. I think the point I was making is that as I drive around the state, there is some revitalization of main streets, but there needs to be a lot more. So can one criticize some of the money spent on economic development? Of course, but what if the money hadn't been spent? For example, Buffalo is really coming back. I can't say that for the 133rd district. Just recently, Penn Yan got $10 million for Main Street development. Livingston County, 133rd, did not get the money. That would have been great for Dansville. There's 100 things that could be done to revive the 133rd. So I would give a net plus for state economic development. Could it be much better? Absolutely. One of the last conversations with Mr. Noje that I had, and I ran into him twice, was he was telling me how corrupt the whole thing, because he always had the negative. So, of course, there's things that are wrong, but Buffalo is thriving.
Okay, no, but and I know Ms. Burns is going to have her time.
Yeah,
let me just follow up on that point
on
Buffalo.
Ahead.
Some of the criticism of Buffalo is maybe Buffalo is thriving in certain ways,
yeah,
but is this the proper way to get it there? Have there been bid rigging? Has there been corruption that has led to some of that? Are you comfortable with the Buffalo billion, the way it's all been rolled out? And if we're concerned about corruption with your predecessors, are you comfortable with what's happened in Buffalo?
No, but I do think that a lot of it was very good, but there probably has to be more accountability in Buffalo, yes. And I think Buffalo was sort of an experiment. Could it have done better? Yes. But there are reports now that there are jobs that are now occurring as a result of that economic development. And by the way, let's just tell the truth here. It's really hard to create a job. It's a new universe. Manufacturing is coming back a little bit, but the jobs are more in sort of the health industry or in Apple or things that are way beyond what we've had. So the fact that they're actually doing solar energy and creating solar panels, that's great. Could it be done better? Yes.
Okay. Ms. Burns.
Thank you. Certainly economic development is exceedingly important. And I do agree that we do need to have a lot of oversight to make sure we don't have any situation like the Buffalo Billion situation again. I would disagree, though, with Ms. Baer. All the statistics I saw are that manufacturing in our area has been going down. Our population base has been going down. Our jobs have been going down in the 133rd district. And What I'm told, because during the course of the primary, I've been all over the district. I've been down to Cohocton and Wayland and Arkport and Hornell, up to Pittsford and everywhere else in between. For months, I was meeting thousands of people everywhere I could. And what they were telling me, and not just people in your traditional businesses, but also the farmers and the small farmers, is that the main problem in this district is the business climate. That the taxes that are imposed on businesses is making it difficult or prohibitive to have their business in New York State, so that they either close their business or they move out of state. And when they do that, the jobs go with them or are lost, and the economic basis is lost because you lose your tax base. And that's happening up and down this district. We really need to make a concerted effort at a state level of making businesses know that they're welcome and that we'll do things to help them thrive.
Cut taxes? Cut regulations?
Yes, absolutely.
Do you agree or disagree on that?
Cut regulations. If they're the right regulations, they could be cut.
Okay, what
cut
about taxes?
Cut taxes on businesses? Yes, a little bit. And they have been cut. Frankly, the budgets for the past several years have given tax decreases for the middle class and for business.
So is that enough right now? If you go to Albany, if you're in this seat, do you go to Albany with the goal of cutting more taxes?
I go with Albany with the goal of helping develop the 133rd. And I was saying that the 133rd has not gotten its due, partly because there's never been a member in the majority who could advocate it, or a member who actually cares enough to have some vision to say, what can we do in the 133rd that would be different? For example, the whole recycling issue, the whole issue of plastic, there's ways that we can't sell it now to China. There's ways that we probably, with a bit of intelligence, could find some ways create jobs around getting rid of and recycling plastic. It needs to have some vision and some thought. And that will create jobs for younger people who want to stay. We are losing the population, absolutely. And we need to have main streets in every town that are vital. They're better, but they're not anywhere near exciting like they could be. It's a beautiful county, okay. And it could be better.
Okay. Ms. Burns.
We have small businesses and large businesses already. Certainly, if a company moved in, that would be wonderful. But the businesses we currently have, many of which are farmers, small farmers, and dairies, these are current, ongoing businesses that are struggling. And we need to help them now. Bringing different types of businesses in would be a wonderful thing if we can do it. But the priority number one is to take care of who's here now and help them survive. And I've talked to the farmers, especially the small dairy farmers who have about 200 to 250 cows, and they absolutely tell me that the taxes, the regulations, the lack of a business climate, and also the changes in the minimum wage are making it cost prohibitive for them to operate in the state. And if we lose them, which is our number one agriculture in the state, and it's the number one industry. It's number one industry in the state, and number one industry in this district. Then we're going to be in a bad state of affairs. Those are who we need to fight for.
So you're raising the subject of wages, just real briefly.
Yes.
If you can set the wage yourself on the state level, what should minimum wage be?
I'm not sure right now if we need to set a specific wage per se. I think to a certain degree the marketplace should control.
So there should be no minimum wage, let the market decide.
We have a minimum wage right now.
Right.
There is. But as far as, like, for example, if the minimum wage were to go up to $15 an hour, a lot of the small farmers, and they've told me this, can't afford to make any money and pay their employees. They're on a margin right now. Where I live in Caledonia, we have a police officer who gets paid $18 an hour. If we have to hire the kids in the summer to mow the lawns in their summer employment, getting paid $15 an hour, why would anyone want to be a police officer and earn 18 and put their life on the line?
Well, under that argument, everyone should starve. I mean, I find that totally unacceptable.
No.
First of all, the minimum wage should be $12.50 and it should go to $15. And people can't live on that. Let's be real. You know, people at McDonald's are now making, what, $15 an hour. It's still not enough to have a family. And in the old Rochester, people had jobs in the big three companies where they could raise their family. That was the middle class. We lost 60,000 of those jobs. People deserve a living wage. And when you look at how people live in, for example, New York City, and the lack of equity between people who make $200,000, $500,000, $1 million, $200,000, $500,000, and we can't pay someone $15, due respect, I totally disagree. And that's part of the problem of not having the vision to bring in new industry that will pay better.
Help me understand one thing, though, then I'll go back to Ms.
All
Burns.
Right.
When Ms. Burns is saying, I've talked to small businesses, I've talked to farms, I've talked to people who employ others, their margins are thin already. You take the minimum wage to 15, they could close.
Absolutely.
Are you saying that's not true?
No, I'm saying that is part of the problem. But another part of the problem is that farmers have not been well represented in Albany. I mean, I would go to Albany and get on the Agricultural Committee. Just recently, the governor and the president have begun to look at the problem of farmers. A farmer told me, yes, he just sold his herd because he saw the problems coming. Another one told me that he needs to sell to Canada 2 days out of seven to make a profit in the dairy business. Dairy business is a big business. The smaller farmers are unfortunately a smaller percent of the dairy business. Nevertheless, we should have been helping dairy farmers for a long time. We should be exporting milk. We should be talking to people about how to use dairy. It's a great product. The agricultural industry in the state is fabulous and it brings in a lot of revenue, and it should be better represented. So I think that the minimum wage is one problem, but I do not think that's the whole problem of farming.
All right, one more quick comment on that. Go ahead.
Certainly. I am a member of the New York State Farm Bureau, and I've been attending meetings with both the Steuben Farm Bureau as well as the Livingston County Farm Bureau, and attending their events, speaking to them as well as speaking outside of those events to small businesses and small farmers, because I'm trying to learn what do we need in this district. And the reality is, in this district, if the minimum wage goes up to $15 an hour, people will not have jobs. And that we can't afford to lose. Now, obviously, $15 an hour is not a living wage in a lot of areas, and it might require two people working. I'm not saying it's a good situation, but the reality is, if we don't have these jobs, then people have no income. And that would be really horrible.
All right, you got a chance to see where both of the candidates stand on their websites. Marjorie Burns, you just heard, is the Republican candidate in the 133rd Assembly District. Her website is burns4assembly.com. That's the number four. Burns, B-Y-R-N-E-S, burns4assembly.com. Barbara Bear, the Democrat in the race, barbarabear2018.com. Bear is spelled B-A-E-R. I'm way late for our only break. We're right back to your phone calls. We've got questions from listeners on a number of other subjects, which we will hit as fast as we can when we come back. Coming up in our second hour, there's an elder law fair this weekend in Monroe County. But we're taking a particular angle with elder law. We're talking about how it impacts the LGBTQ community. If you're someone who is not supported by your family when you transition, or your gender identity is not accepted, what does that mean for your future rights, and your estates, and your relationship? We'll discuss it next hour. All right, we'll try to keep it tight with listener feedback, and I'm going to start with Angela in Rochester. Go ahead, Angela.
Hi. I believe we should have universal health care. This is the United States of America. I had an aunt that worked at Delco for 30 years, and her pension, she couldn't even enjoy it because every year health care kept charging her little pension check, and she had to keep paying into the health care costs. I have another friend, you know, she has cancer. all these tests you have to do. It's thousands of dollars for a copay. It's always $200. So, yeah, I believe that this country is strong enough and wealthy enough to afford everybody the right to be taken a look at by their medical professions. You're free of charge. We can all be taxed for it. It's ridiculous. All right. This is supposed to be the first world country.
Andrew,
and as far as the economy goes, mm-hmm. we need to start developing our students in the inner city. We have the highest poverty rate in America. And when are we going to start investing into the real thing? Let's collaborate with businesses and schools. Get the business people to come in and mentor these kids and show them a real skill. So that's my little statement.
Angela, thank you for the phone call. You heard the candidates on healthcare. So let me ask on her second question on investing in education. Ms. Baer, would you go to Albany seeking to increase the funding for education?
Well, I think that we just increased it another 2%. So I'm not saying I would or would not yet, but I do think that your platform is great. And let me say this. I think that the idea of business partnering with schools is fabulous. And I think that in small corporations, businesses, and community colleges need to partner with students, because basically a lot of students are graduating or not graduating without any hope and without any direction. So they need guidance and a niche. And for example, if a construction company could mentor 10 kids in a school and they would learn some skills, and the skills are not so easy anymore, and the students felt that at the end of that they had a job, that would be great. So I absolutely agree with that. And I think that, in the 133rd, which is, again, economically diverse, there are areas where BOCES and other programs would be great to have children have an opportunity to have a job.
Okay. Ms. Burns.
Thank you. Again, when I get to Albany, we'll have to look at exactly what the proposals are, how the money is going to be allocated. And, the devil can always be in the details. So you really need to know what the details are before you can make a educated decision.
Yeah, and one thing that happened last year, which I was very happy about, is that the reason the amount spent went up was that pre-K was offered. And every study shows that every child benefits from pre-K. And so I believe finally in this whole area, we now have pre-K. And that's great for everybody.
Okay. Let's get back to your phone calls. Robert in Fairport next. Go ahead, Robert.
Yeah, thanks for taking my call. I'm kind of curious if either one of these candidates would be in favor of introducing legislation that would require elected officials to show up for their term, at least for at least a minimum amount of time. We just had a case where David Gant attended just 4 of 59 days of the 2018 legislative session. I don't understand how we can have elected officials that are supposedly elected officials and then just don't even show up for their job. We've got a judge in Rochester who hasn't seen a case in 2 years, and we're still paying for that. I'm kind of curious to see what our candidates think.
All right, Robert, thank you. And I'll just say about David Gant, I know he has had some health challenges. Yeah. I don't know how directly related, and I'm not trying to be an apologist one way or another. I also understand the concern that beyond David Gant, there's a concern about attendance. What do you think, Ms. Burns?
No, my understanding, without getting into details, is that Mr. Gant has been sick, and it requires him to be in this area. Without knowing any other details, yeah, yeah. I wouldn't venture any opinion.
So beyond Mr. Gant,
but should there be
a minimum attendance if you're healthy?
Yeah, obviously, if there's no health-related issues, I'm sure there could be other things that aren't popping into my mind right now.
Okay.
You know, you certainly expect that the people that you hire to be your elected officials, and this is the ultimate job interview, to be here today and talk to people, that they will show up for work and that they will do their jobs.
Okay.
Well, that's why I'm running, because you see, when there's a two-party, what was your name, Robert, I think? When there's a two-party system, there's actually competition, and people's feet have to be held to the fire. And even though this is an uphill battle, I want to make public service better, because power should be for the people. So I don't think there needs to be a regulation. I frankly think here's a solution. This is a new solution, which I hope people will think about. And it's a four-letter word. It's called VOTE. Please go vote.
Okay, but I think both of you on the subject of term limits have said you wouldn't serve more than three terms. Is that right? Have you both said that?
Absolutely.
Yes, it's on my platform also.
Okay,
yeah.
so both.
And I think what's going on in all ways, you know, Mr. Arrigo wouldn't be there if there were a term limit. And, you know, between gerrymandering, letting one party dominate, and people not voting, how can you not vote? This is the greatest country in the world. People go to vote and get shot, and yet people don't go out to vote. I mean, I want to tear my hair out.
All right,
go vote for the
We've
opponent.
Got to move on.
I don't care who you vote
We're
for.
Running
go
out of
vote.
Time. We're running out of time. We've got it. All right, so real quick here. Kat's emails to say, what a wide-ranging district. Do the candidates feel their district is gerrymandered, and would they be open to a redrawing of the lines?
They're going to be redrawn. They are redrawn every time that there's a census. And neither one of us knows in a year what this district's going to look like. But we know what it looks like now, and it's great people up and down 390.
Okay, so let's hit a couple more questions that have come in. Ed wants to know where you stand with the governor looking into full legalization of marijuana. I know you don't like the up and down stuff, but generally right now, would you vote to legalize recreational marijuana?
Absolutely not.
Absolutely not.
We have agreement there. Okay.
I have two sons, and I do not think marijuana should be legalized.
Okay. Mark emails wants to know where you guys stand on the SAFE Act. Now, I think both of you have talked about gun ownership in your families and familiarity with firearms. I think, Barbara, if I'm remembering correctly, you have said that you don't think anyone in your family has been prevented from owning the guns they have because of the SAFE Act.
Correct.
In other words, is there too much emphasis on the SAFE Act
Yes.
that you keep it?
Yes. I think the SAFE Act has done hunters... no harm. I believe in the Second Amendment. I think the SAFE Act is fine. My sons, as I've said, are hunters. When November comes, they're all happy to go hunt. One of them has a concealed weapon permit. We have guns in our house. They're locked up. And I respect hunters. So I think part of this is that there's some value that if you're for the SAFE Act, you don't have respect for people who hunt. I have great respect for people who hunt. I think the SAFE Act as it is fine. Now, I do want to say that the candidate for governor on of Ms. Byrne's party, Mr. Molinaro, has said that he basically supports background checks. And in fact, Ms. Byrnes has said that, and I think it's a very honest comment, that in reality, that the chances of the SAFE Act being changed at this point are I don't think she used the word de minimis, but she said that it would take a change in the legislature and a change in the whole Republican Party. So I do not wish to make, and I think this is what's happened before with Mr. Nojay and a little bit with Mr. Arrigo, that the SAFE Act becomes the whole sort of obfuscation of the campaign. And that's not...
You think they've made it a boogeyman with voters?
Well, whatever that means, yes. I mean, that's it. You know, yes. Okay. I think some mother out there who's worried about the health care of her kid is secondarily wants her husband to hunt and is happy if he does. But she's really worried that her child or her aunt or uncle have health care.
So I got to give the last 90 seconds to Marjorie Burns. Go ahead.
Thank you. If I had my druthers, the SAFE Act would be repealed. There are some provisions in it, including protection for first responders, that I think could stand alone. And if there's other legislation that affects specific issues that's appropriate, that could stand alone. But the way the SAFE Act is drafted, it catches a lot of responsible gun owners in things that shouldn't be affecting them.
1 minute left. Give me an example.
For example... if I have a pistol permit, which I do, and then I decided in January not to renew it and just to let it go, and I don't have any pistols, so there's nothing illegal, I just don't want a pistol permit anymore, the state has a right to come into my home and take my shotgun that I use for skeet shooting, even though I never needed a pistol permit to own that gun or to buy it in the first place. They now have a right to take it because I don't want a pistol permit. I'm a member at 4 sportsmen's clubs in the area, and I am a member of the NRA. And I really, really do believe that if there are issues to be addressed, they can be standalone, and that legislation passed in the middle of the night without anyone looking at it or evaluating it was wrong fundamentally from the beginning.
Now, I want to say as we wrap up the program, Jim called from Rochester, wants to compliment the intelligent discussion from both candidates, a lengthy discussion, but there's a lot more on their websites on different issues. They're going to be at different forums, and they both were here happily. They both said, yes, we'll be here, and one of them is likely to win next month, and they've promised a new standard of leadership for the 133rd District. BarbaraBear2018.com, and it's Burns for Assembly. Marjorie Burns' website, BurnsForAssembly.com. Marjorie Burns, thanks for being here. Really appreciate your time.
Pleasure.
And Barbara Bear, nice to have you back here. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Short break. More Connections coming up.